2 years ago, the launch of the virtual reality headset Oculus Rift was the first time consumers had access to relatively affordable VR. While it's still not a household staple, market forecasts predict that virtual reality will be a $40 billion industry by 2020. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Emily Woodbury. Join me this hour as I take a tour of the Virtual Reality Application Center in Ames, a research facility that studies how we interact with technology. This is where the military contracts research for training soldiers, where vehicles and ships are mapped out before the manufacturing process, and of course, where some virtual reality games are put to the test.
Okay, these stormtroopers are shooting at me. This is pretty realistic and terrifying. And my lightsaber is malfunctioned. Ah, there's a bullet.
That's all coming up after this news from NPR.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
Good afternoon. You're listening to a special edition of River to River. I'm Emily Woodbury in for Ben Kiefer. And today, I'm at the Virtual Reality Application Center on the ISU campus in Ames. This is a research center focused on how we interact with technology. Its stated mission is to enhance people's productivity and creativity via several technologies like virtual and augmented reality, robotics, and haptics interaction. Here with me to talk about what happens here at the Virtual Reality Application Center is its director, James Oliver. James, thank you for inviting us here today.
My pleasure, Emily. It's a pleasure to show you around the Virtual Reality Application Center. We're an old center as it goes. We founded in the 1990s, and we've grown over the years to encompass researchers from all over the university. So we serve the entire university. We have researchers from all seven colleges. We look at what life will be like to be, say, a geoscientist in 5 years, or a design engineer, or even a veterinarian in 5 years. All these fields are impacted very dramatically by the rapid advance of computer and interaction technologies, spanning all those things you mentioned.
And before you start to show us some of the labs you have here today, I'd love to just go through a couple definitions that will be kind of integral to the conversation today. So we have this thing called virtual reality, and we have augmented reality. What are the differences between those two?
Great question. A lot of confusion, I think, in the public space. Virtual reality is a set of technologies that enable us to simulate sensory stimulation. People generally think of it in terms of their visual sense, and we can do that with a number of different technologies. You'll see some today. But we can also talk about your sense of hearing, the oral sound. We spatially localize things with sound. Haptics is one of those technologies that allow us to synthesize force and touch, contact, that type of thing. And then there are also researchers looking at sense of smell and any other ones, believe it or not. But there's a lot of different ways to simulate the virtual environment, and there are many different applications.
And from what I understand, virtual reality is when you put on, let's say, a lot of people know about the Oculus Rift, is you put on something over your eyes, mm-hmm. and everything you see is virtual. But augmented reality could be glasses where you're seeing a real table, but you're seeing a virtual object on a real table, right?
Exactly. And there are different ways to accomplish that effect. But essentially, you're merging the physical world with the virtual elements in that world. So we can do that with head-mounted displays. We can do that with tablets, believe it or not, or even smartphones. But the idea is you're merging your natural perception with virtual content that again, has certain application and value. But that's augmented reality. There's also mixed reality, where you mix physical artifacts with these other things, and I'll show you some of that as well. But there's a lot of different flavors of it. In general, virtual and augmented reality are sort of sisters.
So, Jim, you want to show us the C6 first. What is the C6? What are we looking at here?
The C6 is a immersive virtual reality room. It's a 10 by 10 by 10 foot cube, essentially, where all surfaces, all four walls, floor, and ceiling are illuminated from outside with, in this case, very high resolution stereoscopic imagery. So you can think of it in layman's terms as a holodeck. We can turn it into anything. Everywhere you look is VR without anything on your head.
Okay, cool. I'm excited. Let's check it out. Okay, so we just stepped outside the C6 really quick. We're getting ready to go in. We're in this beautiful space here on campus. I mean, we have a huge kind of cylinder shape. That this is the C6. It has kind of rainbow metallic paneling on the side. It looks really big, but we're going into a 10 by 10 by 10 foot space. This is going to be interesting.
Right. The reason for that is, first of all, the history of this building. It's almost 20 years old. It opened in the year 2000. And this three-story atrium, we were asked, what would you do if you had the ability to build a cave, is the general term, or a six-sided cave, is the C6. And we dreamed this up, but the idea of this structure is intended to look like a cyclone from the entrance, a very stylistic cyclone. But its purpose is essentially just to block the ambient light of the room from the inside, because we project the walls. And the reason we needed so much room is because we have to project from the outside of that 10 by 10 foot cube.
Okay, cool. Well, let's step inside. What are we going to be doing when we get inside?
We're going to go inside an application that we developed for Boeing Corporation to evaluate next generation aircraft that they were designing for the Navy. And they were interested at very early in the design stage on decisions that they have to make that have very major cost implications downstream. So they wanted to place this hypothetical new digital model next to existing F-18 aircraft and explore trade-offs in various design decisions, and then view it from different locations. So what will this aircraft look like from the control tower, from this officer's point of view, and that type of thing. So let's go see it. Hey, Adam.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Emily.
Because the floor is a projection surface, we're going to ask you to either take your shoes off or put something over your shoes. It's up to you. And then you'll shuffle in there with Adam, and he'll hand you a pair of glasses, the same kind of glasses that you wear in a 3D movie, okay? And when you go in, the door behind you is going to slide shut, so don't be alarmed by that. And Adam will take you for a tour on the USS Ronald Reagan, as I described.
I'll close the door for you.
Let's do it. Stepping in. Okay, so now we're in the C6. We're in this virtual reality cube. The door just closed. It's a 10 by 10 by 10 foot room, and I'm here with Adam Cole. He's a graduate research assistant at Iowa State University, and we are on the USS Reagan.
Yes. So as you can see right here, we're staring at the F-22 over here, and as we move closer, you can actually get right up next to this aircraft.
And when you say move closer, you have actually what looks like a video game controller in your hand. We're not actually walking towards it.
No, that is correct. But actually, so my headset is tracked. So right now we're only tracking one headset. So as I move, the screen will move. So if you notice, as my head position goes lower, so does the entire scene around me. So if there is a chair like you see right now in the scene, I can move around it. It's a virtual object, and it will orient with me throughout the scene.
I wonder, so we're both wearing 3D glasses, and we can see, the aircraft in front of us in 3D. And maybe it's because you're moving and I'm not, but I feel a little dizzy.
Yeah, that can definitely happen. So that can happen in virtual reality, but it's a little better with these glasses because this is active stereo. So in your movies, that's more passive stereo. So here, these are actually synced up to the projectors, going at 60 hertz for your eyes, so you can get a more seamless 3D experience, so you don't get too low of frame rates or things like that. So with this handy iPhone app here, we're going to be able to...
And please describe what you're looking at here on this app.
So this is an app that's actually modeling the aircraft, and with this app, I can control things such as move these wings up and down. And on most aircraft carriers, you can see we want to launch these planes and see, okay, is there enough room for these planes to take off, etc. So we're going to go here and launch one of these F-22 planes.
Okay, so right now we're on the virtual USS Reagan about to watch an aircraft take off. And there it goes, and we're flying above the ocean. So now we're walking along the craft, and now we're looking out at the ocean. And so you know, right now we're just kind of playing around, seeing what we can do with this. How would this be used by the U.S. Navy? You know, how would someone come in, and what would this simulation be used for?
Correct. So a lot with the Navy is a logistical standpoint. And when you just look at a model on a computer, it doesn't give you a realistic approach and visualization of how big this aircraft carrier really is. Can we fit as many men on here as we think? And when you have more specialists, such as admirals or things that have been on these ships, they can feel like they are right on another aircraft carrier, and they can get a better sense of, yes, this will work, we'll be able to fit all these different items that we need and things such as that. So instead of just staring at 3D models like on a computer-aided drafting software, they can really immerse themselves in this aircraft carrier.
So the point being, so you don't build an aircraft carrier and suddenly realize this isn't what we need for our, you know, what we need to use it for. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're going to have another plane take off here. Come right at us.
Yeah, this is a little bit terrifying. So a plane is going to be, it's coming right at us, and it looks 3D, and I'm standing here, and there it comes.
Oh. So that's what you wouldn't want to do.
The wheels just clipped our foreheads, virtually.
So just to ask, are any of you a little afraid of heights by chance?
No, I'm good with heights.
Because there haven't. Sometimes where people have been a little squeamish because, again, there are projectors in the bottom of the floor. So if you look down, you'll have an image coming right up from the floor, all sides of you.
Oh, yeah. So when I look down at the floor, this is the floor of the aircraft carrier. Wow.
Yeah. So as we go up here, you can get a better idea of the bird's eye view of what maybe an admiral or a captain would see on this ship.
Oh, my goodness. We are just kind of floating through the air. This is like some of my best dreams have just been floating effortlessly into the sky. So that's what we're doing right now. We're floating above this aircraft carrier. It is pretty incredible how much this feels real, even though I am just standing in a small room. It feels, when I look around, it feels like I'm up high. That's pretty incredible.
So there are a total of 49 computers that power this whole system. So there are 48 in a big room over behind you, and then one master that controls them all. And that is what has helped displaying all this information onto these screens. So we're going to dive down underneath into the belly of the ship. So this is where a lot of people would be interested in saying, okay, do we have enough room to load different types of ammunitions, depending on the type of weaponry that they need, or logistical support, depending on the mission?
Okay, so now we've floated down from the top of the aircraft carrier, and now we are in the body, the belly of the beast, and it almost looks like an underground parking lot of sorts.
So you can get a realistic sense of how big these aircraft are, versus if you go to it next to a normal-sized forklift here, you can see how massive these structures are. So that can fool you when you're just on a computer monitor, but when you get immersed in this world, it can really help bring that to light.
Okay, and now we're floating above the ocean, looking at the aircraft carrier from the side, and yeah, we can get a real view of how big everything is. And again, this is all in 3D. You know, I could see, of course, right now we're looking at this for commercial or U.S. military applications, but I could see, you know, and just of how it feels, you asked if I was afraid of heights. I could see virtual reality being used to help keep people conquer fears. I mean, you could help kind of conquer your fear of heights by being in a very safe space while feeling like you're up high.
Definitely, definitely. Yes, there's all different types of applications we can use in here. There's been firefighter training to medical uses, so going through and being able to slice into a person's chest 3D medically and be able to go around and check all different types of organs, tissues, things like that. So wide variety of applications. Yes.
Okay, so we stepped out back into our reality, stepped out of the room. So we're going to take a look at the apparatus outside of the C6, outside of the 10 by 10 cube that we were in. Let's take a look. We have Jim Oliver back in the mix. Hey, Jim.
Hello. This is the back room. This is how the C6 works. Every surface, all six of the surfaces are illuminated by four digital cinema projectors with a very high resolution, 4K resolution. These were some of the first that Sony created. And this version of the C6 was created by Mechdyne, which is a company based in Marshalltown. They founded that company, it's a long story, but they were students here and designed some of the first cave technologies that were commercialized. And they won the bid for our major upgrade of the C6 in 2008. And this makes it the highest resolution, fully immersive VR room in the world. There's only one other like it. It's in Saudi Arabia at King Abdullah University of Science and Technology. And ours is still better than theirs. But these types of systems are in use at many manufacturing companies because we can experience things at a one-to-one scale. Exactly how big the product is. That's why you just felt like you were about to fall off the aircraft carrier. And they can evaluate a lot of human factors and design issues with digital prototypes and evaluate their functionality and all kinds of usability issues digitally.
So if you've just tuned in, you're listening to a special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio. We're at the Virtual Reality Application Center in Ames, and we just stepped out of a cube, a virtual reality cube, where we're standing on the USS Reagan aircraft carrier with Adam Cole. He's a graduate research assistant here. And Adam, what brought you to work here, and what are you working on?
So what brought me to work here was my freshman year, my first professor ever in college was Dr. Elliot Weiner. And after my first class with him, he asked to bring me on as an undergraduate research assistant. And since then, I think about 6 or 7 years have gone by, and we've done some amazing projects that have inspired me to keep continuing my work. And so I am now a doctoral student pursuing mechanical engineering and human-computer interaction. And with that, trying to kind of bring together the worlds of virtual reality and augmented reality with artificial intelligence and what is going to be happening here in the near future. So it's a very exciting time to be a researcher here.
Okay, so we just walked into another room at the VRAC research facility. I see in front of us a very small desk with very little on it, a headset. I see a toaster oven in the back and some heating pads and a desk with a computer, and several kind of, I would say motion detector looking devices all over the ceiling. Tell me a little bit more about this room, Jim.
We're doing a little pilot study here in this room with a colleague in nutrition, and he's interested in understanding how our environment affects how much we eat and how fast we eat. The whole idea of satiety and understanding when you feel full is a mystery, actually. And in terms of health, he's interested in obesity and diabetes and all kinds of health issues related to diet. And the goal here is to explore how we can use virtual reality to simulate an environment that you might experience in the wild, as we say. So when they do research in the laboratory in food science, it's a very controlled environment. So they literally sit you down in a white cubicle and they control the sound and the lighting and everything else and put some food in front of you and say, eat. But nobody eats that way. We eat. It's a social environment, typically at a restaurant. There's other stimuli around. And so what we're doing here is we wire up a subject with a little sensor, biometric sensor that counts the number of times you chew. It's a little sticker on the side of your face. We also have some biometrics that measure heart rate and other types of information on what's happening in your body. And then we bring a subject in. We use pizza snacks because they're easy to heat up over there. If you look over here, you'll see a head-mounted display. This is a commodity head-mounted display. It's the HTC Vive. So about $500. This is the difference between the millions of dollars of C6 and what's available commercially. These are designed primarily for gamers, for your basement. And it's a very high-performance head-mounted display, very good resolution, very good field of view. And it also includes a little sensor we put on here to track where your hands are. So this little sensor with two red dots is called a leap motion sensor, and it's able to with a depth camera, essentially looking out, the same thing that used to work with the Microsoft Kinect controller, it's looking at my hands and allowing the virtual environment to draw my virtual hands exactly where my physical hands are. And that allows us to coordinate the virtual and physical worlds, as we were discussing. We also have a tracking system in here up above. If you look to the left and right, this is it tracks where this head-mounted display is relative to the room. And we know where the chair is. We know where the physical, the table, chair, and the operator, the person is in this environment because of those tracking systems. And all that is very straightforward to do now. This device right here is a biometric sensor.
That, so you're holding it looks like a watch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Almost like an Apple Watch, which I have on my wrist, but it does the same kinds of things. It has sensors in it to do heart rate, skin conductance, various other biometrics that we can use to measure the response of the person. And that just plugs in. We take data with that and download it when we're done with the session.
Okay, so if I'm a participant in this study, we're studying the behavior of humans while we're eating. I come sit down at this very small desk, nothing on it, because I'm going to be strapped into a virtual reality in a minute. So I put this headset on my head, and now all I'm seeing is the virtual restaurant.
That's right. These sensors here are the ones that are counting the chew motion. It's a muscle contraction sensor. And a little piece of tape goes over that, and we plug them in. And all that data is fed into the computer and recorded confidentially. Very, you know, this is all rigorously controlled study. And then we analyze that data after the fact. So we've run about 20 subjects so far, and I think we have enough data to get some interesting results.
Okay, and so I have my headset on, my wrist mechanism on. I have my pizza rolls heating up behind me if I were a subject here. And then, yeah, when I sit down, they'll bring the pizza rolls to me, and I'll be seeing virtual pizza rolls and a virtual hand. Mm-hmm. But really, it's just the computer interpreting my hand and my real pizza rolls, and then the study continues.
Let me describe how it starts. So in order to make sure we get that registration, that spatial correlation correct, when we put the actual food on the table in front of the subject, an operator presses a button on the keyboard and a virtual plate slides in front of the user. And then we ask them to just feel the edges of the plate because it sort of localizes their tactile response. So they see they're watching their virtual hands that are in concert with their physical hands. They feel the edges of the plate, and then we say, go ahead and start eating and maybe choose the one in the upper left. And they choose it, and it's about right exactly where they expect it to be. They pick it up. And when they pick it up, they typically tilt their head up. And at that point, the operator presses a button, and the virtual pizza roll disappears, and they eat it. And they look down. There are 9 instead of 10. And they eat the next one on that row, and they just keep going.
Interesting. So I could see where, you know, if you were studying, you know, does having a huge plate of food versus a small plate of food influence the amount of hunger you have? And so I could see that being used in that research realm. That's very interesting.
Exactly. My colleague, Jim Hollis, has many, many ideas for how we can explore this type of merge of technology and the science behind their field. And this is just the very beginning of some preliminary data to just show that we can induce different behaviors.
I wonder if, yeah, they could have like a low-calorie pizza in front of me, but then in virtual reality, I see this big, greasy pizza slice.
There's all kinds of possibilities, that's right.
You're listening to a tour of the Virtual Reality Application Center in Ames. I've been talking with the center's director, James Oliver. We need to take a short break. You're going to want to stay with us. In a few minutes, we'll learn more about what studies tell us about the relationship between technology and humans. And I try out an augmented reality headset that combines virtual reality with the everyday reality seen through our own eyes. I'm Emily Woodbury. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to a special edition of River to River. I'm Emily Woodbury. I'm here at the Virtual Reality Application Center in Ames, Iowa. We're on ISU's campus, and with me now is Stephen Gilbert. He's an assistant professor of industrial and manufacturing systems engineering, and he's an associate director of the Human-Computer Interaction Graduate Program. Now, humans interacting with technology and computers is all about what we're here to learn about today. Stephen, tell me a little bit about what you work on as far as human-computer interaction.
So think about all the gadgets we interact with. If you want to have an autonomous vehicle that you can trust, or if you want to have an iPhone app that's going to manage all of your bank accounts and you're going to trust that and you're going to find it easy to use and not accidentally send money to the wrong person, if you're going to be a surgeon operating with tools that actually assist you in the surgery, what does it take to design those tools and those systems? It takes a lot of different disciplines, psychology, design, computer science. So our HCI program, Human-Computer Interaction, blends all of those disciplines, brings them together.
Okay, and I could see even when you think about psychology, you know, we hear how a lot of us have smartphones on us now, and we're constantly connected with others. We're constantly taking pictures of our environment. And we hear things like the more we take lots of pictures, the less we remember things. Is that what you mean when you say you kind of study the psychology behind human-computer interaction? Is that an example?
Yeah, there's a good example with one of my students doing her PhD in note-taking in meetings and for students in classes. And there are a lot of people with computers now, it's so easy to take notes. They just take notes verbatim, but they're not processing notes as deeply. And then there's issues of, well, do I remember where I put those notes? So some people are getting really good at remembering where they store information, but less good at remembering what it is. And that's a problem. If I'm an executive who takes notes at a meeting but doesn't really process them, I'm not going to be ready to make that quick decision when I have to later on.
And is that because the technology just makes it so easy that you can quickly type notes on a keyboard, you know, quicker than you can write them down? And when you write it down, you're kind of visualizing it and taking the time. Is that what makes the difference there?
Yeah, that's it. When you write down, your instinct to be a little lazier makes you want to process that into shorter words, what you just heard. So you process it, and that processing helps you out.
So, you know, 2016, I think, was the first time that we saw, you know, virtual reality being kind of commercially available to the public. The Oculus headsets, for example, is a popular one. Do you see the future of virtual reality being individual consumers, or do you see it more as, you know, large companies using a training software, about what you're describing right now?
You know, it's going to be a combination of both. And I think just like with, 3D printing, there's a lot of schools now have 3D printing for their kids to make small models, and they can learn a lot from that. But if you're Boeing, for example, you have $20,000 3D printers that are beautiful and large and can make a perfect small replica of a plane, because you want to put that in a wind tunnel and get the exact data you need. Well, the schools don't need that, right? So for VR, I think it's going to be similar. There's going to be VR for consumers that let me go on a vacation to Paris and maybe see my relative who's far away in India. And then there's going to be VR for people who need to do engineering collaboration, you know, at a firm. One of the interesting things about virtual reality is that you might think we're about done with VR. We've got our headsets, they're getting cheaper. But I was just part of leading a workshop for the National Science Foundation where we got 40 leaders in the VR field to say, where do we still need to go? What are the problems left to solve? And there are a lot of them, actually. The key theme is, I think, individual differences. People vary in how sick they get in these virtual reality things. There's a small percentage of people who get pretty sick. And you don't want them having a VR experience and then being so disoriented they can't drive their car, right? But, you know, they're also varied based on height and how far apart my eyes are on my face. And people have individual differences that we need to take into account. So that is a lot of what we're going to be solving over the next 5 years.
And do you think those hurdles that you just mentioned are why virtual reality hasn't really become popular yet? Because, you know, it is commercially viable. People can purchase an Oculus Rift, but virtual reality systems aren't in the average American home. You know, we're not seeing virtual reality, in our everyday lives.
I think we got to be a little patient, honestly. We're so used to our culture of immediate gratification and things turning around fast. But as you said, it's only been a couple of years since the Oculus came out. You know, the virtual reality application center that I work in has been around for over 20 years. We've been doing VR, but it was expensive. Now it's gotten cheap, and we just need to wait for people to start producing interesting material that will appeal to all those people. Once somebody makes it really easy for me to make a VR experience to share with my cousin, I'm going to want to do that. And then we will see a blooming growth of this area.
Now, Stephen, we've been talking about your work within the Human-Computer Interaction Graduate Program. And as we look at how humans interact with technology, you know, there's a lot of concern about how much time we spend on our smartphones, on our screens. Is that something that you see as being more of a concern as virtual reality becomes more real, as we use virtual reality more, or even augmented reality? You know, how do you see that concern over whether we're living too much inside a virtual world?
I think the big concern for me is something I also see with my kids sometimes, or with any children who are getting used to technology, and that's that the technology responds pretty instantaneously. Most of the time, you tap something and it does what you want. Well, the real world is not really that way. The real world doesn't respond instantly, and it doesn't do what you want, usually. So sometimes I worry the more we spend time on technology, we start to think of the world responding to our every touch and tap. And we may lose our patience. We may forget that negotiations and relationships take a while to develop. But perhaps a good VR training environment for relationship development will arrive. And once the sensors are there to see how I'm feeling and how if I'm stressed or if I'm happy, and that's part of that VR headset, then the avatar on the other side could watch me and see how I'm doing, and we get actually a decent relationship going.
Stephen Gilbert, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a conversation with Stephen Gilbert, an assistant professor and associate director of the Human-Computer Interaction Graduate Program at Iowa State. If you've just tuned in, this is a special edition of River to River on IPR, recorded at the Virtual Reality Application Center in Ames. I'm Emily Woodbury. James Oliver is director of this center, and he's my tour guide this hour. He came to Iowa State in 1991, and one of his first big successes was a proposal to the Navy exploring virtual reality for manufacturing.
And that's when I really dug into the technology, and at the time, it was really primitive. We had very awkward ergonomics, and the weight was heavy. It hurt to put it on. The field of view was poor. The resolution was poor. There was a lag and latency. And what really came along in the mid-90s was a technology invented at the University of Illinois Chicago called the CAVE. And the idea was, instead of small screens close to our eyes, let's make them wall-sized displays and a room-sized display. Original CAVEs were a big wall in front of you, two walls on either side of you, and then the floor projected from above to give you this very nice field of view, very good resolution. Very expensive and took up a lot of space, but it really is the technology that saved VR from the hype cycle, from being overhyped. And those types of systems are in use in many manufacturing and product development applications, architecture. Obviously, you saw the C6. That's the extreme end of this of a cave, a six-sided cave. But really, what came along then is just 4 years ago or so, we all saw Google Glass, which was sort of an experiment that Google put out. But around that same time, 2013-14, some young people started a Kickstarter campaign to re-examine head-mounted displays. And the big news in 2014 is when Facebook acquired Oculus, which is a VR company, for a market capitalization of $2 billion. And the reason that Mark Zuckerberg gave for that was he viewed this technology, VR technology, as the next platform. So we've gone from PCs to mobile phones. He thinks the next generation will be virtual and augmented reality.
And what are some consumer applications beyond video games that you see?
Mm-hmm. Right now, there's reports out because of all this investment and excitement. There's a Goldman Sachs report that predicts markets in certainly in training in many different fields, in healthcare, in the military, real estate, believe it or not. Entertainment, live entertainment. So the what we haven't talked about is 360 video, but the ability to put yourself in at courtside in the NBA finals and look around and watch it happen in real time. So and real estate, you could go and visit a home without ever being there physically and walk through the kitchen and see what the countertops look like. And it's an incredibly rich potential. And they anticipate major markets opening up in many different fields.
Okay. So we have an Oculus Rift here. Are we going to try something with this?
Sure,
I'm
going to put you in this environment right here. And this is a derivative of some work we did with Boeing that was exploring work instruction delivery for factory workers. So imagine Boeing has very large work cells. They make airplanes. And so they're bigger than this room, big giant chunks of airplane that swarms of people are running around assembling and putting together. So they wanted us to explore if we could use augmented reality to improve that process. And instead of reading a PDF file across the room, we would take it on a tablet, and you could see the part, the next step of a part flying into its location. So rather than read and understand, you just watch it happen and do what it's showing you. This is a virtual environment of the same type of a thing. We're going to put you in an Oculus Rift, and I'm going to give you these two controllers. And this is a simplified version that we use to compare augmented to virtual reality, and you're just going to pick up parts, and you'll see a little sort of virtual representation of where it's supposed to go, and then you'll put that part together, and you'll go through a few steps and maybe some nuts and bolts and that type of thing. So we're going to put you in there and see how it goes.
Okay, let's do it.
You're going to have one of these in both hands.
So I have like what looks like a video game controller chopped in two that I'm going to be holding. Okay, so
what do you see?
Sorry. So I'm actually standing in an office space.
You are?
Okay. Yeah, now all of a sudden I'm in a warehouse with lots of boxes. Yeah. Oh my goodness, right next to me is a thing. Okay. Here are my virtual hands.
Well, there's your virtual hands, right?
Okay, oh
okay,
my
now
goodness.
Turn around and I think now, okay. See that green part?
Yes.
You have to find a part that looks like that.
Okay. So and I see a green bar, and it's telling me to put it down on this.
Right. That's right. That's
on this table.
Right.
So
now you have to look for it.
There it is. So I'm going to walk over here. I'm actually walking. I'm grabbing this part.
Good.
Turning around, and I'm going to put it on the table.
Oh, it already went to the. It snapped it. You did it.
It snapped it down.
You're very efficient.
Okay. Yeah. There's a green thing telling me where to put the screws. So
that's a washer. You got
eliminating room for error.
Exactly.
You know what? I could see this being really helpful. I'm thinking of all those times that I've been trying to build furniture and gotten frustrated with the instruction manual. This just tells you where to put everything. Yeah. It's very easy.
So that's a useful. We've used that to do experiments with people's efficiency and understanding of the process. But now I'm going to show you something that is just to show you the potential for sort of cinema quality graphics. Okay, so that was sort of you could tell that wasn't real. It looks it looks pretty good, but it's not exactly realistic. I'm going to put you in. It's a demo that comes when you buy an HTC Vive. You get this. Okay, so. It's as if you are in the Star Wars movie. So you're going to go in there now.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Wow. So I'm on a planet. I'm not sure which one. The Millennium Falcon is
just landed on
is just landing right above me. Oh, R2-D2. Hello. How are you? R2 just rolled up right in front of me. Uh-oh. Oh, geez. All right, we're being shot at.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm pulling down part of the spaceship.
Yeah, there you go.
Now I'm going to fix something on here. Hit the red button. Man, fixing spaceships is easy. Here's my lightsaber.
You press the trigger when you light up.
Oh my goodness.
All right, you're going to be
I have
attack.
A blue lightsaber.
And swing at those people with. Oh, there you go, that's okay. There, yeah, swing at it like a baseball bat, because they're shooting at you, and you got to shoot back with that lightsaber. There you go.
Oh, no, my lightsaber turned off.
Oh, no, it did. I don't know what you did. Yeah, it's...
I'm going to hide under these barrels. Okay, these stormtroopers are shooting at me. This is pretty realistic and terrifying, and my lightsaber is malfunctioned. Ah, there's a bullet.
So what's interesting to me watching you do this,
because
we're going to take you out. There you go.
Oh, now I'm just back in an office.
Is that when you felt threatened, you took cover behind those barrels, which is a natural thing to do because there's all kinds of attack going on. So, and the barrels didn't exist, but when you did, but when you crouched, because this is tracked, you felt like you were behind the barrels. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt more safe. Right. And I could see when you're, you know, testing people who are doing this, actually my heart rate's up. I'm sweating a little bit.
Yeah.
I could see how, those kind of biometric feedbacks that you could see, you know, when people feel threatened, what they do. Very interesting. Yeah. I didn't even think about how silly that must have looked with me crouching in the middle of your office here. To me, it was very understandable.
You're not the first one, so. HoloLens, you got to see this.
Okay, so now you want to show me the HoloLens. What is a HoloLens?
The HoloLens is Microsoft's augmented reality device that is for sale. You can mostly for research applications. But as you can see, first of all, I'm not tethered. There's no cable to this device, standalone. So there's a computer in here. There's also, notice out in the front, are those same depth cameras that we talked about before. So this device is sampling the physical world and understanding where this is relative to the chair and the wall and all those other things.
So I'm standing in front of you and this device sees me.
It knows you're there. It has a little polygonal representation of you and all the furniture around us, and it's continually sampling that because it needs to know where the real world ends and in order to draw the virtual world properly. So what I'm going to do is just bring up a little hologram here and a little white dot, and I'm aiming the dot and I'm selecting with my index finger, and I'm going to choose a hologram. And I'm going to put, oh, there he is. He's sitting there right there. There's an astronaut over here from last time I used it. So he's sitting there, and as I'm looking, he's sort of facing me. He's floating above those monitors over there. You don't see him, but I do. So I see the physical world of the lab and this virtual astronaut sitting there. I'm going to, I don't know, maybe I'll make him bigger. I'm going to let you see it first, but you'll see it as I put it on you. So there are screens that are superimposing the virtual with the natural light that's coming in. I'm going to tighten this on your eyes or on your head.
I see the astronaut. It looks like a hologram floating in the middle of your office space.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can walk over this way. It's standing still and you're moving around it. I'll tell you what we did with this is the wing assembly that you did in the virtual environment. We actually had the physical wing upstairs and various physical parts and fasteners and things that you experience in VR, but we used the HoloLens to essentially do exactly the same thing, show you the instruction, but you physically put it together, not just the virtual snap to. You actually took the real part, put it in place, and then say next with a pinch, and it would show you where the fasteners are, and you take six of those and you put them in. And so this device is how we deliver the work instructions to the factory worker.
Yeah.
And we can show improvements in the number of errors that people make and in the speed at which they can assemble things. And statistically significant results, and lots of studies that have shown that. So that was another derivative of the project that we did with, it's an ongoing project with Boeing, exploring the augmented reality's potential on the factory floor.
You're listening to a special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Emily Woodbury, and I'm here at the Virtual Reality Application Center in Ames. Been talking this hour with James Oliver. He's the director of this facility. You are looking at so much here at the Virtual Reality Application Center. What's your next major focus?
One really interesting topic that we see coming from a number of different directions, interestingly enough, both industry and government, is you see a lot of work in automation, whether it's self-driving cars or any number of machine learning applications. Typically, those applications require a lot of data in order to teach the computer what to do, right? And a lot of data may be difficult to get. Let's say we're trying to teach a machine to harvest a field. There are many different variations of fields, and you could collect all that data year after year and feed it into your machine learning algorithm. what we could do with VR is essentially simulate all of the sensory information that the machine is getting, whether it's visual or auditory or any other sensory information, and feed it into the deep learning, machine learning application, and essentially anticipate all of the sort of odd cases that might occur. So the case of the pedestrian that was killed by an Uber car in Tempe, Arizona, perhaps they didn't have a situation where somebody jaywalked in this specific situation. So we could randomly create any number of virtual environments that would simulate the real world and make these automation schemes smarter.
And for your students going forth in this field, is this a field that has a lot of job openings?
Absolutely. The students that you met, Adam and others, are inundated with job offers. In fact, it's hard to keep them around much as they get involved here. They get exposed. Many of them do internships and are wooed into coming back with permanent offers once they graduate. But there are many, many opportunities. Again, our graduates go into fields as diverse as the insurance and finance industry in central Iowa, but all the way out to entertainment, to defense, to manufacturing, medical instruments. Almost every field is impacted by these technologies, and there's the opportunities for people who can really understand all the dimensions, the human side and the technical side. They're just very much in demand.
Jim Oliver, Director of the Virtual Reality Application Center here in Ames. Jim, thank you so much for talking with me today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
To listen to the entire show and see photos from our visit, go to iowapublicradio.org. This edition of River to River was produced and edited by Ben Stanton. I'm Emily Woodbury. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.